Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. NPR's Tiny Desk is 15 years strong, and arguably stronger than ever. We've seen Usher's 2022 Tiny Desk performance build on the momentum he had, which led to his 2024 Super Bowl halftime show performance. We've also seen Juvenile attempt to do the same as well. He gave us an unforgettable 2023 Tiny Desk show, and we'll see if his campaign to get on the 2025 Super Bowl halftime show stage in New Orleans is successful. But we continue to see rising artists continue to get opportunities on this stage, and the demand is higher than ever. NPR Tiny Desk gets hundreds of pitches per week. It's still selective, but part of the constraints and part of that focus and that stripped down opportunity is what makes Tiny Desk as unique as it is. This is a show that still wants to highlight rising artists, but when there's more demand than ever for the superstar acts, how do they balance it all? And to break this all down, I'm joined by Tati Sirisano from Media Research, so let's dive in. All right, today we're here to talk about the Tiny Desk that has become one of the most important platforms for a lot of musicians, and that's NPR Tiny Desk, and I'm joined by Tati Sirisano. Welcome back to the pod.
Thanks, Dan. I love it when our topics allow me to just go down YouTube rabbit holes as this one did, so great to be here.
Tiny Desk is interesting because started as an indie folk rock type of thing. The producers for All Things Considered had seen an artist that was performing at South by Southwest on 6th Street in Austin, saw that the crowd that she was performing in front of at the bar wasn't really vibing with it. So then they invite her to DC, set her up in this Tiny Desk, and boom, that kicks off this run. But Tiny Desk isn't just the indie folk and rock artist anymore. There's a lot more pop, there's a lot more hip-hop, and there's a lot more superstars. And it's funny because that journey sounds so much like Coachella, which is another episode that you and I did. Is that journey a coincidence, or is that journey a pattern?
I think that the genre-based trends are following the trends of general consumption and the kind of genre cycle. Hip-hop has been such a dominant genre. They have received a fair amount of backlash before for not broadening their genres. But the bigger that one of these platforms gets, you want to make sure as an artist that you're using that opportunity at the optimal time in your career. You don't want to do it too early. At Coachella, that sets the payout level, that sets the benchmark, but also for something like Tiny Desk, you probably only will do one Tiny Desk. Then it starts to be this thing where you actually want to wait until you're a little bit more established to do it.
Right. We've seen artists like Kendrick Lamar or Bad Bunny or Lana Del Rey going from being one of the smaller size fonts on that poster to being the biggest headline name on that poster and being one of the main draws. I've listened to interviews with Bobby Carter, the person that runs it, and his position on it is that this is still a platform for rising musicians. And if you see most of the shows that they have coming out on Tiny Desk, they average around 3 a week. Most of them are for rising musicians. But again, it kind of creates this thing where if Tiny Desk's focus is to try to elevate the rising musicians, but the rising musician thinks that they want to hold out until they also can get as big as they can, then how does that work? And I also imagine, too, that the demand may be a bit imbalanced, too, because they get hundreds of requests and pitches every week, and they're only picking 3 shows to do a week. So there's a lot of artists that want to get on Tiny Desk that clearly haven't.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this actually with Maggie Rogers. She did a Tiny Desk in 2017, which was when that Pharrell video and she was getting a lot of buzz. In one way, that was a great time to build on that moment, but she would be a great guest today. As an artist, you have to decide when is it better to have that push at the very beginning, or would you rather wait until you're a little bit more established?
This just speaks to the amount of attention and mindshare that something like Tiny Desk has been able to capture specifically in pop music. If you look at the lane that Tiny Desk operates in, this is a lane that MTV Unplugged used to own. You go back to the 90s and even the 2000s, epic memorable performances like Nirvana and Mariah Carey, they all had their shows there. One big difference, though, is that MTV Unplugged is a true traditional recording studio versus Tiny Desk is literally in the Washington, D.C. office of NPR. But we've seen a few organizations. You have KEXP that has had their version of shows. You have Boiler Room. You have Colors. But Tiny Desk really has been able to have a strong mind hold there. And I wouldn't call it a moat, but there's something that they've been able to capture that makes it sought after that, frankly, isn't that hard to recreate. We've seen SNL recreate Tiny Desk for one of their shows. We saw Drake and 21 Savage for their spoof video recreate what a Tiny Desk looks like. So it's not hard to replicate, but there's still something that makes the attention that it's able to capture unique.
Part of that is NPR's brand and being sort of a trusted voice in all of news and entertainment, but also particularly for music. It's like this accidental genius of making it at a desk because it enforces these constraints that make for dynamic performance. You can only have a certain number of people behind the desk. You really only get one take. You can't have really any advanced equipment for it. These constraints have become part of the draw. It also is seen as this place where you have to actually be really talented to do a good Tiny Desk show because you don't have anything to hide behind. So for fans, that's great because I think it drives people to want to see how an artist is going to perform. And I think for artists, it's great because it gives them a space to prove themselves. Like there's some artists like T-Pain is like the biggest example with Tiny Desk of coming on and kind of beating the you're just auto-tune allegations with this absolutely beautiful performance. For artists, it also they like it for the same reasons that fans do. And it is sort of this unique alchemy that I think only Tiny Desk can have.
Right. You can recreate the setup, but they're over 1,100 shows in right now. And they've had these milestone moments. Everyone still knows and remembers T-Pain's performance. This fall, that's going to be 10 years ago that he had done that performance, which is crazy just how quickly time flew, right? It's at a musician's advantage to be able to do that. And it's funny because when you think about the performances that we've seen since then, how many of them have really wowed you in that way? Wowed in the way of, I didn't know that this person could do this, and then they did this. The next closest one that I could think of is Mac Miller, when he had done 2009, that song. Unfortunately, he passed away shortly after that. But everyone thought that he was just this punk backpack rapper doing songs about Party on Fifth Avenue, Donald Trump. Oh, wow, you have a voice and you can hold a note here. I'll be honest, I feel like as great as a lot of these performances are, those type of things feel few and far between. For instance, I enjoyed Justin Timberlake's performance, but when he's holding a megaphone singing, I'm bringing sexy back, I'm like, that kind of alters your voice. Isn't that not the purpose of this? Especially for a song like Sexy Back, which is so audio enhanced by everything Timbaland did on that song. And I'm not going to say it wasn't fun, but how does that show continue to thread that line? And I know that's something that Carter, the producer, has continued to talk about. He spoke about this in a recent LA Times interview, and he sat down with PBS and spoke about this as well. How do you continue to thread that line between fulfilling the demand and the push for what people want while still maintaining the constraints and the authenticity that make this what it is?
Right. Tiny Desk gives you as an artist that flexibility to do something you normally wouldn't on SNL, where you're really there to promote your single. They feel like the audience that's there is there for them as a multidimensional artist. And because of that, it becomes an actual differentiated piece of music. We talk a lot about how with streaming, it's like every platform has the same catalog. Everything's on demand. It's all access. With this, it's actually something that's scarce. It's actually a performance and a way of listening to your favorite artist that you actually can't get anywhere else.
Do we think that NPR's role as a nonprofit plays a role in the attraction here? Could this format have worked if it wasn't under an organization that's not profiting off of the music? Of course, there's indirect benefits that NPR gets from the more attention that Tiny Desk show gets, the more intrigue that may bring in from the donors who make NPR and public radio across the United States possible. But it isn't the same as everyone knowing that MTV is a company that's under the Viacom umbrella.
Yeah, it does kind of remove any incentive to like promote a certain type of artist or to, have some, it allows them to actually showcase the artists they really want to showcase.
Another thing that we should talk about too, because we're talking about the audience of NPR, Tidy Desk is a show that attracts a lot of the people who are voting members for the Recording Academy. If you think about the type of performances that resonate with Grammy voters, it's performances like these, even if they're not hosted by Tidy Desk. They look at the person that came through and did the private set back in the beginning of their career for Grammy voters, or they attended this Grammy brunch or this Grammy event back then. All of those things are seedlings. And a lot of those things, they prefer to have them as stripped down events, because a lot of these voters, as many of them, could care less about the commercial success, but they want to see, can you actually perform? Once the glitz and the glamour is stripped down, can you actually perform? And there is a pipeline where I want to pull this quote from this LA Times article. Quote, apparently those eyeballs included a lot of Grammy voters, a staggering number of this year's high-profile nominees, including Taylor Swift, Megan Thee Stallion, Jacob Collier, Dua Lipa, Chica, Billie Eilish, HYBE, BTS, Black Pumas, D-Smoke, Jhené Aiko, Brittany Howard, Harry Styles, and Phoebe Bridgers have recently done Tiny Desk concerts, despite a pandemic that forced artists to shift the Tiny Desks to their home. End quote. So I think there's a big push there too, which is why I think a lot of people in the industry, whether it's the PRs, the publicists, or the management teams, do try to get their artists on these shows, especially if it's part of this broader machine to help win a Grammy.
Yeah, I agree. I think it kind of speaks to how Tiny Desk is this platform where it's not necessarily about reaching the biggest audience. It's about reaching the right people, and whether that's the right listeners who are like the really diehard music fans that are going to put their friends on to other things and that the mainstream eventually follows, or if it's the Grammy voters and people in the industry that are making these decisions.
Reaching the right people is also interesting too, if you look at the viewership with this. So you and I have talked about Dua Lipa in past episodes and things that we enjoy about Dua Lipa's career and things that have been criticisms about her career. But what I'm about to say applies to a lot of people. So Dua Lipa has the highest viewed Tidy Desk out of anyone. It was a Tidy Desk home concert that she did right around the time that Future Nostalgia came out. So we're talking peak pandemic, end of 2020, and has 124 million views. However, if a Dua Lipa music video that she released, whether Houdini, Dance the Night Away, Training Session, whatever, if one of those videos only had 125 million views, it would be looked at as a disappointment. Let's discuss why that is, because we get caught up in eyeballs and viewership and mindshare, but what does that mindshare actually mean? And why is it different for something like Tiny Desk?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of similar to how, as an artist, you're, for example, the number of fans you can sell merch to is going to be smaller than your Spotify monthly listeners, but the merch figure is arguably more important because it means that those are your real fans. So I think it's a similar thing here where the benchmarks are sort of different. With Tiny Desk, you're reaching the really, really big music fans, or you're reaching people in the industry. And so if your video has 175 million views, it's become like a Tiny Desk that is sort of more in the mainstream. So it speaks to how we need to have different success metrics for these different things, and we can't just be focused on eyeballs all the time. But I think it's also about, with music videos and just video for music in general, its history was a way to deliver music to the mainstream. But increasingly, as we talked about on our music videos episode, it's more of a fandom product. So I actually think that the viewership of music videos is also a metric that needs to be reconsidered, because I don't think it's any longer about reaching the mainstream so much as it is about reaching your biggest fans.
I would agree. Music video plays on YouTube, it's much shorter. Tiny Desk segments are normally around 15 to 25 minutes, ideally created for YouTube and its algorithm and the product, by the way. That's something that the NPR producers have spoken about. Versus music videos, yes, they play well to YouTube given the short length, but they really aren't made for the algorithm. We're talking 3 to 5 minute clips. So it's very different. That's something you and I talked about in our YouTube episode. But again, who are the people that are watching those? Is it more likely to be the repeat plays over and over from your most passionate fans that are trying to drive this song up the Billboard Hot 100 so that their favorite artist can chart? That's very different from people who may not have been exposed to you as much before that are then watching you perform at this. Success for a Dua Lipa music video is quite different, where New Rules now has over 3 billion views. I think that's the same amount of views as all of the Tiny Desk concerts combined. So the benchmarks of what success looks like is so different. But yeah, that's why 100 million views for one type of thing, even if it's on YouTube, is not the same as 100 million on another.
100%. Yeah.
Let's take a break for this week's chart metric stat of the week. 21 Savage once said that a lot of people in Atlanta think that Future is bigger than Drake. Well, we decided to run the numbers. And if you look on YouTube, there could be some truth to that. Drake's monthly YouTube views in Atlanta as of May 7th were 3.3 million compared to Future, who had more than 7.5 million in his hometown of Atlanta. But if you compare that to Spotify, it's a little different, where Drake's Spotify monthly listeners in Atlanta are 831,000 compared to 721,000 for Future. So it depends on the platform, but it's close, and closer than a lot of people think. Let's get back to the episode.
I love how Dua always ends up in our Tropical episodes.
Speaking always. Of her, let me run through the remaining top 10 of the artists who have the most watched Tiny Desk concerts on YouTube. So number one, Dua Lipa. Number two, Mac Miller. Number three, Anderson .Paak and the Free Nationals. Number four, Sting and Shaggy. Number five, BTS. Number six, Psy Tiganga, which is a Tiny Desk home concert. Number seven, Georgia Smith. Number eight, Adele. Number nine, Justin Bieber, which was another Tiny Desk home concert. And number 10, Alicia Keys. So there are definitely some big names there, but that's a very interesting list because people like Taylor Swift have done Tiny Desks and she isn't on that list. So sometimes it isn't always necessarily about who is the biggest artist in the world that ends up getting it. It's about timing and all of the other things lining up with everything that we're saying here.
Right. I mean, a handful of those were pandemic time Tiny Desks, the Dua Lipa one, the BTS one, maybe also the Justin Bieber one. I'm not sure.
This was a Tiny Desk at home concert during the pandemic,
which benefited from everyone being home and wanting to view these things, but also it was a completely different format that was a lot more produced and glamorous. Like Dua Lipa's was like the furthest thing from performing behind a desk. It almost feels unfair to have those on the same list, and I wonder what it would look like without them. I'm surprised Usher's isn't up there. I thought his would be one of the most viewed.
Yeah, I checked his as well.
Maybe it's
his,
too recent.
Fairly recent. His was summer 2022, which is crazy that that's now been almost 2 years ago. But his was either around 22 or 28 million. I forget the exact number. Still, not a crazy number. Usher has music videos for songs that are not that popular that have right around the same number of views that he's released recently. But again, it's the same type of thing that we're talking about. And of course, the YouTube views don't capture the amount of times the memes get repurposed on TikTok or the amount of times that the different clips get repurposed or positioned. That kind of stuff goes viral more. It's not because the music video doesn't look good. It's because it isn't as unique in that way of the Tiny Desk concert is. It's something that disrupts the timeline. And I think that's probably a good reason why it captures that attention. And it's tough because the bar of having a beautiful music video, that's now become table stakes. But something like Tiny Desk isn't. So you're able to combine the two of those and create a very special moment. And we saw that for Usher. That Tiny Desk was the straw that put everything else over to help him be able to perform at the Super Bowl. I have a list I want to run by you and get your thoughts on. So this is a top five ranking of the most coveted promotional opportunities for an artist. Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
So number five. Number five is your late night host circuit that you have, whether it's doing a show on Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, or Colbert. Number four. Number four is doing a Tiny Desk performance. Number three. Number three is doing a performance at the Grammys and a major award show like that. Number two is doing a major performance at a music festival. I know that music festivals are paid events, but it's still a good promotional opportunity. And number one is doing a performance at a Super Bowl or a sporting event like that. Does that list seem fair? Is there anything you would change on that list? Is there anything you would add?
If we're talking about unpaid ones, I would also think things like the New Year's Rockin' Eve or the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, but that's a totally different audience.
Would you bump one of those up for that?
Maybe not. That list seems pretty accurate. I don't think I would put that above anything here. But it depends what you're going for and what kind of audience you're trying to reach. I texted a publicist friend of mine who represents big artists, and she called Tiny Desk la creme of promotional opportunities, saying that it is up at the level of a late night show or something like that, depending on the artist that you're working with. When I texted her this question, she happened to be on a video call with a Tiny Desk producer.
I believe it. Everyone that is trying to release an album, you're trying to find the opportunities, right? Whether you're trying to reach out to get an interview with Vogue or Vanity Fair, you're trying to get your artist on Hot Ones or whatever the opportunity is. I do think a lot has changed, even in the past 6 or 7 years, when they talk about a rising artist that really does blow up afterward. You can look at a group like Tank and the Bangas. They had that Tiny Desk performance from 2017, and that really elevated that group to the point where then they become Grammy nominated for Best New Artist. Then they become much more commercially successful than they once were. But again, 2017 is a very different time than it is now. Streaming, all of these companies were making a fraction of what they're making. You look at social media, and platforms like Instagram were literally making a tenth of the quarterly revenue that they were able to generate right now because of the active users that are on the platform. So I honestly do wonder, could we ever see another Tank of the Bangas moment again, just given how fragmented it is? Because most of the performances that reach the mind share of people talking about them, Tiny Desk performances specifically, are from established stars or existing superstars.
Even if NPR's mission with this is for it to be a platform for rising artists, what consumers are coming to Tiny Desk for increasingly seems to be those bigger artist performances. We've kind of lost a lot of the traditional channels for presenting music to people. Like, playlisting isn't as big as it used to be. People aren't listening to albums. Tiny Desk could actually emerge as a new form of curatorial platforms that people are looking for, where it's not genre based, it's not algorithmic based, it's not a playlist that has no human behind it. It's like it's a trusted voice or trusted brand kind of putting you on to music.
The opportunity for Tiny Desk to curate and showcase who the rising stars are is quite powerful. And I'm sure that it likely provides a breath of fresh air. I know a lot of people that are currently working for labels, for publishers, for companies, and they're trying to find the next rising acts. It can feel a lot more like science than art right now, because you're looking at TikTok numbers, you're looking at streams. Their job in many ways feels more like a product manager at a big tech company, where your job is to help maximize revenue and impressions for this particular widget area of the company's website. The productization of music has pushed a lot of these jobs to that, and it can make it a bit harder for some of the more romanticized narratives that can draw people into the industry, such as watching a Tiny Desk concert, such as having that intuition to be like, yes, I knew that someone was a star, someone had star potential, almost in the same way that we're talking about Tank and the Bangas from 7 years ago. But I think that even that can be tougher now, because someone will be like, oh, great, this person looks good. Oh, great performance. Wait, how many Instagram followers do they have? Oh, ooh, you only have 11,000? Wait, well, how often do they post? Oh, wait, you post every day and you only have 11,000 and you only get however many likes? It's like everything goes into this
depressing
internal equation. And then someone could be like, let's see how they continue to bubble, even if you have an amazing performance.
You mentioned something, which is the star power element, and how a lot of the other platforms for live performances don't necessarily give the artist the space to banter with the crowd and like talk a little bit about the songs and things like that, because you're only performing one song. You just don't really have the space for that at like a Grammys performance, for example.
As we're talking, I'm looking through YouTube's catalog of their NPR Music Tiny Desk concerts, and you can see the views for each of the videos that they have and also the profile. So I will say a majority of the artists that they have coming through that stage are still rising artists. I have heard from talking to managers that this process in general can be a lot of who you know, who you don't know, no different than Grammys. Are these artists getting opportunities? Because there's still a majority of the artists that come through on this stage that are less known. But that isn't what's rising to the surface. It's been years since I've seen a Tank and the Bangas type of thing rise through. And I don't think it's because there hasn't been an artist that's put on an amazing performance. I think it's because all the other things competing for my attention have gotten so much better from an algorithm perspective of maintaining my attention that it's harder for things to be able to break through.
Yeah. When you have hundreds of emails in their inboxes every day, you end up by necessity having to rely on other ways to weed through. And so it might be who your label friends are excited about or who has a bigger PR team or things like that, where it could be harder for an independent artist to cut through the inbox clutter.
You posed this question before we started reporting in terms of is the draw for NPR and this Tiny Desk series the superstar artists that are performing, or is it more so the brand itself?
Right.
And I think that there is still a mix of both, because even though it is the well-known names that do get the acclaim and do get the virality that goes through with their performances, especially more recently, it's not as if those same artists are just chilling in their home and just putting up a live stream themselves and that live stream gets the same performance. No, it's because Harry Styles and Ed Sheeran went on Tiny Desk. It's because these superstars that we know went on Tiny Desk. And it's that combination, no different than a music festival where Beyonce may have done other music festivals. She may pop into Made in America. But what's the festival performance we talk about? Coachella. What's the Jay-Z performance we talk about when he did Glastonbury? It's because the big stars attach themselves to these established brands. And that combination is what elevates it.
Yeah. Tiny Desk has a lot of its own sort of lore around it. Like all of the tchotchkes that you can see in the background that like artists have left behind, little things on the shelves. The origin story that you mentioned at the start of this, that attraction and lore to it that I think fans like to dig into too.
So where does the show go from here? Especially if you're not trying to repeat guests, do you ever run out? Do you try to recycle if there's something new? Do you just continue to meet the demand? They aren't trying to make this a profit-driven thing. However, this is still an organization that needs to run some form of a P&L, and that form of a P&L needs to have something that can justify how many resources are we putting towards this? How much are we paying those resources? Because is that helping us get more donors to come through the pipeline for NPR because of the attention that the Harry Styles and the Dua Lipa and the Taylor Swift shows get? But as we've talked about plenty of times, there's only so many of those people. You go through those people, then who do you have?
If they were to try and make this a live show that you could buy tickets to, it would erode at the magic of what makes it so good in the first place, which is it being in this small setting and like the NPR offices. I think one thing is for sure that I do not think they will ever run out of great performers. I sometimes get depressed about things in the state of the industry, but I continue to be astounded by how much talent there is out there and how many new voices I discover. I loved the Chapel Roan Tiny Desk performance. That was a recent one. I think it would be cool for them to revisit certain artists. If it's been like, for Maggie Rogers' example, it's been almost 10 years since that performance. I think it's okay to have people do repeats. So I don't think they'll ever run out, but it's a good question about where you go from here and kind of gets at that question we often talk about, which is the tension between having something that is so special because of the size it is, yet you are always pushed to grow and to scale. And how do you do that while keeping the magic of what made the thing special in the first place?
Right. And that's the one place that I do think that they have a strength with. And Bobby Carter, the producer of the show, has spoken about this. The constraints that they've been able to keep with the show is what breeds the creativity, is what makes this all possible. And I think the opposite version of this what we saw during the pandemic is the evolution of Versus and how Versus really started as this pandemic thing. Okay, it's cool. Let's see Jill Scott and Erykah Badu have their iPhones doing FaceTime with each other and going through their songs back and forth. Oh, so wholesome. But then by the time you get to Bone Thugs and Harmony and 3-6 Mafia and Jeezy and Gucci Mane and all the groups that are there, you then evolve it into this concert where you're trying to sell tickets. You have all these sponsors that are going up there. You have all these people that are trying to ask you for more money than they get from other performances. And even though the founders, Timbaland and Swiss Beatz, were very focused on trying to keep it what it is, there were certain things that clearly evolved. But that is what happens when you evolve beyond the restraints for the set product. And it really relies on a artist like Jadakiss that's giving this legendary hip hop performance at his Versus battle. But now you've set a bar. How can you eclipse that? So that's where these things become challenging.
Yeah, definitely. That's the Versus is a good example.
Right. Because I think that there are plenty of Versus battles that you can look back on and say, I don't know if that one quite worked. It's a little bit harder to do that with Tiny Desk because the stripped downness of it should lend itself to almost every artist being able to look good. It is very hard to look bad in that setting. One artist that does come to mind, I know that Post Malone's performance that he did definitely received a few mixed reviews. There was one piece in there from one of the articles that I had read that had referred to it as it seemed like the only purpose of this performance was to show what the stripped down version of the voice sounds like. Again, that's fewer and farther between, though. There's a lot that works with this format, and I agree with you. You can mix it up. You don't need to have the artist come through every time they're dropping an album or every time they're trying to win a Grammy. But like you said, a lot's changed in Maggie Rogers' career. Let's see what that looks like. But not enough has changed in a lot of these superstar careers. And especially now, we're just now seeing a lot of these R&B stars come through. We're just now seeing a lot of these hip-hop stars. You have so many international acts that could come through. Who knows what a country artist could come through? Or I know they have had country artists. But what about some of the mainstream country artists from back in the day to come through? I think there's so many opportunities to do something unique.
They've also expanded to other countries, I believe. I think there's an NPR Japan. I mean, sorry, not NPR Japan. Tiny Desk Japan. And maybe other places as well. So that's another potential growth pattern, I guess.
Definitely. Before we close out, anything else on Tiny Desk or NPR and how this show became what it is?
Do you have a favorite?
Ooh, good question. My favorite that I've seen. Mac Miller's was great. That was the one for me that I was like, oh, wow. Okay, I look at you differently after watching this. I wasn't expecting that. He was the person that really wowed me from that. And it was really impressive.
Yeah, Anderson I agree. Paak, too. There's also so many that I haven't seen. There's hundreds of these. But I think Mac Miller is definitely one of the top. Also Usher. We already talked about it, but that was just fabulous. His presence is amazing. His voice is amazing. I screamed out loud multiple times watching it. It was so good. So yeah. But there's many more. This inspired me to go down, like I said, a big rabbit hole, and there's many more left to be watched. So I'll have to do some more exploring.
Anyone that hasn't done one yet that you want to see?
Oh, that's a good question. Has SZA done one? I feel like she hasn't.
I don't believe she has. Let me check here.
I think she would lend well to something like that. One of my favorite videos of hers, it's Hit Different in Good Days, and she's performing them acoustically on like a bed, and it's amazing. I feel like she lends well to those sort of like stripped back types of performances. So that'll be my pick.
And it could still happen because on February 2018, Bob Boylan, the former producer of this show before Bobby Carter took over, tweeted, SZA came to perform a Tiny Desk concert but had to cancel when she realized her voice was too strained. As an apology, she hung around to chat, hug, take pics with every NPR employee and friend who came out to see her. So February 2018, this is still after Control had came out, but her career is definitely at another commercial level now after SOS. So who knows? It may still be out there.
Yeah, it sounds like it's in the cards for sure.
For mine, I'll take Mariah Carey. I mean, I think she...
that's a great one.
I'll say with a caveat, though, I think she already has done the MTV Unplugged, which we've talked about. I think the tough thing for her is that the voice is not the same as it was when she sang a lot of these songs like Emotions that have this crazy octave range.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily sure if she would be willing to do it. I mean, she clearly has this lane where I have this cash cow of this song that is going to outlive me in terms of my commercial success in my state and everything else with All I Want for Christmas Is You. And she really doesn't need to belt it out, and she can do that for as long as she wants to, right? There could be a bit more risk than is needed to do that. But if she was ever down, I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I would never say no. Never say no to that.
All right. Well, Tati, this was fun. This has been a pleasure. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.